Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for TWiT specials is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT Live special number 204. I'd Fund That Beta 2, recorded June 14th, 2014.
Hello and welcome to I'd Fund That, TWiT's crowdfunding show. I'm Glenn Rubenstein, and today we have four products that are midway through their Kickstarter campaigns, and they'll be demoed for us by their creators. Now, what makes the show interesting is that it isn't about millionaires seeking to invest. The only money at stake is yours. Throughout the show, you'll be able to ask questions in the TWiT chat room, and we'll also be conducting polls to find out how you feel about each product. We also have a panel here in studio, which includes Chief TWiT Leo Laporte.
Hello.
TWiT News Director Mike Elgin. And TWiT CEO Lisa Kensel.
Hey, everyone.
You should be intimidated at this point. Terrified.
Yes.
We're all smiling, so maybe we should have mean looks.
They'll ask questions, give advice, and ultimately tell them, I'd fund that or go fund yourself. So our first product today is Quirky Writer, and here to present is Brian Min.
Oh, hello, Brian. Welcome.
Hi. Super awesome and excited to be here. This product is called a Quirky Writer. And
why not Quirky Writer?
Maybe that was patented. I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
Quirky Writer. I don't know. It kind of flew.
I get the idea. Yeah.
So for people listening, it looks like a very, very flat, traditional, non-electric typewriter.
Yeah. So the Quirky Writer is a USB mechanical vintage typewriter-inspired keyboard. And I'm a game developer, and like a lot of people, we just spend all day typing. And one day, I have this like awesome monitor and these really cool speakers. And then the thing that I sort of touched, the keyboard that I was typing on, was pretty bland. I was introduced to this thing called a mechanical keyboard a few years back. And when I started playing on this, those mechanical keyboards were very expensive. But when I started typing on that, they had this super awesome clicky tactile feedback. I'm like, oh, this is amazing. And then it dawned on me, I wonder if there's a way to merge sort of this vintage typewriter style that I love with this modern mechanical keyboard. And that's when sort of I got this idea for doing this. And I've been pretty obsessed with building this typewriter for a while. Of course, I wanted to have a bit of a modern elements to it. And so the modern element being, of course, this is a mechanical keyboard. So it has these clicky switches to it, which is super, super fun. It has a sort of a USB port, so you could, you know, plug it into your computer or your desktop and type along kind of in that. But ultimately, the thing that's really cool about it is that it has a built-in Bluetooth transmitter, so you can sort of, if you have a tablet or so, you can sort of like thread, you know, your tablet via Bluetooth, and you can sort of, that goes, yep.
Very cool, Brian. So this is actually on Kickstarter right now as the Quirky Writer.
Yes.
You've got 19 days to go as of this recording.
Yeah.
You're looking for $90,000. You've raised $38,000. So
yeah.
You're not even halfway there. But you got plenty of time if we can convince our audience at home to buy this. I have a couple of questions for you. I'm sure you guys do.
I do, too. I want to know what the price is. I mean, first.
Oh, yes.
What are you looking to sell these for?
So right now we priced this at $289.
Okay.
There's a number of reasons for that, but it just doing research. And of course, the biggest cost for this is that I wanted to make sure that it was a mechanical keyboard. And apparently mechanical keyboards are very expensive. And so that was sort of the biggest cost, but that was something that I didn't want to take away, because otherwise it sort of lost you have sort of the look of the vintage typewriter, but I felt like it needed the switch to convince people that, well, this is kind of a modern interpretation, a resurgence of that switch that emulates that old typewriter. So I had to put that in there. And, of course, the keycaps, which are expensive, and so it raises the price. And so a lot of people did question, say, well, wow, who's going to spend $300 on a keyboard? And so it is sort of a tough sell, but I think I tried to make sure that it really exudes a lot of quality, and it feels like something that's sort of an heirloom and kind of that kind of thing. So
you have to price it so you can make money on it. Actually, I'm concerned that you priced it too low. You're not going to take vintage typewriters, take them apart, and make that keyboard.
No.
You're going to have somebody design something. How much due diligence have you done on the actual cost of manufacturing?
So one of the things that I've done was our schedule is is longer than most Kickstarter hardware Kickstarter.
You're saying August of next year for
yeah,
the
delivery. And so a lot of times when I look at some of the Kickstarters, when I did my due diligence, like there's no way that's going to ship in 6 months. And so I factored that in. And also just the fact that meeting with great engineers that are out there that knows about Kickstarter, and they inform me about, hey, these are the things that you need to do, and these are the kind of things it will cost. So, like, tooling will cost $4,000 to $8,000. You know, these keys cap will cost X amount. So I was able to kind of, like, price things out in a way that I felt was pretty pretty aggressive, but at the same time, very realistic.
You feel confident that you can make, this won't be plastic keys, that you're going to be able to make something that's pretty close to what I see here.
Yeah.
For that price and still make a profit.
Yes. I mean, it'll basically just break even. Okay.
It's going to cost you.
Yeah, it's going to just, not including sort of the sort of elbow grease.
But wait a minute. If you're only going to break even, what's the point of doing it?
Well, I think the idea was that it'll break even, but I'll have more units that I can...
Cost goes down.
Yeah. At that point, I would be able to sell at a profit to be able to invest.
And you may put it in retail at $325. You may not be able to get it at $289. That's the Kickstarter price, right?
Yeah, I think... and that was just really challenging in those numbers. And I think maybe, again, getting... I was able to try to get some business... kind of sort of advice, and that was I wanted to make sure that the number made sense for our backers, but at the same time there are definitely some unknowns, so it is challenging. But
so it seems to me that you have two opposing goals here. One of them is to have a high quality keyboard, which is why you're using mechanical keys. You want to go back to the era where, you know, mechanical keyboards, everybody seems to really think that those are the best kind. They feel good, they sound good, you can type really fast on an old IBM, whatever they are, the old, you know, IBM keyboards that are mechanical. Exactly. And that's one goal in one direction. And in another direction, you're trying to be decorative. You're trying to be, it's a visual, it's essentially not a pun, but it references a mechanical keyboard, an old-fashioned mechanical keyboard, especially the big arm thing.
Chroma terminal.
Yeah, I love that.
Exactly. And I would, by the way, recommend that the default behavior of that should be a return.
Yeah, I think, you know? I think that makes sense.
And then let people modify from there.
Right.
But those are opposing kind of approaches. And I mean, I would love personally to have somebody design a keyboard that's purely for the practical performance of it.
Sure.
But that's not what this is decorative.
This is decorative, which is, but it's also, he's also trying to have it be higher performance. So a lot of the cost is to take something that's primarily decorative and making it also high quality, and so that there you end up.
Etsy artists who are taking traditional old Remingtons and reconditioning them. I'm seeing one here by a guy named Jack Zilkin. Mm-hmm. It's $800. It's USB. You actually have room for the, and it's a full typewriter.
Yeah,
right.
$800.
That's a converted old typewriter.
That's completely
different than what we're
having
here.
And this does not scale. Yeah. Right?
I mean, I could see, you know, I could see in the future that you could take this. This is a pretty. You're essentially referencing a very plain vanilla, 1900 era kind of mechanical typewriter. Mm-hmm. But you can imagine some crazy, like, steampunk types, and you know, some really amazing things like that. Because again, this is all about decoration.
Remember, you're talking to a guy here who spent over $5,000 on a steampunk laptop.
This would look amazing.
So you're not maybe the person we should be talking to on that.
I'd be more than happy to
I'm a little torn because personally, I think this looks great. I would love to have something like this. It's a lot of fun. I should point out, because it's USB, you probably could use it on a computer as well as on a tablet, right?
Yes, you actually can. Yes, absolutely. That was sort of like the initial first thing. I actually thought that this was a little bit too gimmicky. And then just what I would
I think there's a market for it.
Thank you.
My biggest concern is can you really do it? And would we be funding something that, while I like it, and I think there's even a market, not a huge one, but enough of a market to make it a real product, can you actually make it for $289?
And can you support it? If I spend that much money on a keyboard and one of the keys falls off,
that's my problem.
Sure,
better fix it, because it's like, you know, that would really be a bummer. I couldn't use it anymore.
Yeah.
So, questions from the chat. Mr. Mike wants to know: does it go ding?
It better.
You can do that in
that
software.
That was one of the stretch goals. We'll put in a built-in speaker so that you could actually. Sample every typewriter, and then you can just say, I want a Remington, or I want an Underwood, and I guess
that's
you can
awesome.
Do it, maybe, as a stretch goal.
Jeff N. wants to know, how heavy is it, and is it really portable?
That was a question. It's going to be fairly heavy, because I think initially when it was like 1 to 2 pounds, the tablet would flip over. And also, there seems to be a correlation between people feeling that it's quality versus when it's heavier. So right now, it's weighted at about 4 to 5 pounds, so it's quite heavy. Uh-huh. And so, yeah, the portability is kind of an issue.
But you're not really marketing this to be a portable thing.
No, I don't think that's the case. That's right. Why I thought there was a bit of, like, when you put this iPad, it's like, wait a minute, an iPad is portable and this is not. And I think really it's just, this is a desktop unit for your computer. And, it, you know, occasionally, if you get really tired of that, you know, square kind of plastic keyboard, you want to bring this. It's kind of like a Sunday, you know.
I, for one, am stunned that Microsoft did not buy you and put this on the Surface Pro 3. It seems like it's clicks.
Really?
It does everything.
What?
You know, it is perfect.
Don't you remember what Steve Jobs said about Microsoft? They have no taste.
No taste. Oh, if they had taste, they would have purchased
this. It would support the Surface Pro 2 is the thickest tablet on the market at 5/8 inch. And this
if
will
it's
support
in there.
That.
Yeah. There you
That's
go.
Interesting.
Although the new one, the 3, I think is thinner.
So, chat room, we want to know what you think. Go to twit.to/quirky. To either vote I'd fund that or go fund yourself.
Twit to Quirky, not QWERTY, Q-W-E-R-K-Y. We'll give them a little time to vote. I think they're going to be casting the tiebreaker is what I think.
It's possible.
Because I'm not sure how this panel is going to vote.
Can I go first?
Before you do, I just have a couple of more questions that occurred to me. Is this carriage return functionality, the function part of it, is that a stretch goal or is that right off the bat?
Actually, that's built in. Again, the engineer, I definitely had left room and budget to be able to do that engineering phase to make sure that some of those stretch goals, which I thought would add to the cost, would be built in.
So what are the stretch goals do you have? Besides the ding.
People wanted ISO layouts, like multinational layouts. So that was like, oh, man, I really want to.
Wow.
But, again, that I'd have to a whole new PCB, and that costs a lot of stuff. But I would love to do that because a lot of my backers unexpectedly were moms and European, like UK folks. And actually, this was huge in Russia. My first Google alert was from, like, Russia blog.
They think it's very modern in Russia. This is state of the art. That's why.
Oh, man. Okay. Yeah.
Not going to touch that one, huh?
So before our panel gives a verdict, we have gotten multiple requests from the chat room for our panel to try out
the
keyboard.
Oh, I was just going to bring
that up. Yeah, it is awesome.
Don't suck up to Leo. That's what
I'm okay.
So Mike is now going to type on it. What is, does it feel like an actual mechanical typewriter, Mike? It seems like it's a little softer than that.
Does it, a mechanical key,
there's a lot of travel.
Huge key travel.
Yeah.
It says less, but it has significant key travel.
Less travel, but some. Considerable, he says. Significant
nice
key travel.
Really
is it?
Good.
You feel like your WPM is going to go up? You know you hit it.
You know you typed the letter, yeah.
You can sell this as
a... Because we all did learn on the manual typewriter, right?
Yeah, a cure for... repetitive stress syndrome because you're going
to...
What?
Well, no, really. That's one of the reasons people get RSI is because they don't have... They're not moving their hands as much.
Yeah, the round key definitely gets a little bit of use.
It's hard to hit.
I had some backers kind of question, how long does it take to get used to? Sure, thank you.
What do you think, Mike? Your verdict?
Great. Yeah, it's great. I'm not used to it, but I'm not going to hold that against it. You would get used to it, and it's really a cool feeling because... There's like a deep like bowl, you know, there's a circular thing and your finger goes inside.
Right.
You really, really feel solid because you feel like you're really on that key.
Mm-hmm.
So I liked it.
Yeah. Interesting. Great.
Okay, panel. So can we get your verdicts?
No, I think it's really awesome. I think it's a great novelty. If this were something that I wanted to purchase for myself, I think the price is too high. I think that's where Mike came into play, where he was saying either go for like the nostalgic look for it or go for the functionality. So I'm going to say go fund yourself on this one. It's
no vote.
I like it, but it's too pricey. I think that's going to be, unless you're in Sky Mall, it's going to be a tough thing to sell.
That's a good suggestion.
So here's my
thinking.
It's
going to be niche.
Yeah, there are a lot of things about it that I really like and some things about it that seem impractical. I would want like a something purely designed for high performance or something purely designed for and lower cost for decorative elements and stuff like that. I tend to not like decorative things. Just that's kind of a personality thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like 50-50 on the fence. But if I really dig down deep, I'd have to say that I'd fund that because I personally would want one. And so that's going to kick it over to I'd fund that.
So I do have to make the decision here. See, here's my concern. If we say go fund yourself, this is never going to happen. I know that Brian is not going to dig deep in his pocket, come out with $90,000 to do this on his own. Brian, I want one. I think it's great. I'm with Mike that I would love to have it. I think there's a market for it. I don't think the price is too high. I think it might be too low. My big concern, and I've been burned on Kickstarter. My big concern is that it's that you're not going to actually be able to do it, even if you raise the $90,000. That sure. This is going to be a real stretch.
Can I make a comment on
yes.
the last point?
Help me, Mike.
You can never know whether somebody is going to be able to do it or not. But
that's
I just
not what
get
you're
the
voting
feeling
on.
Talking to this guy that he's the kind of guy who would do it.
Good.
I just have
yeah,
that.
You have faith in Brian.
Yes.
Thank you.
Quirky Toys, is that a company that's done anything else?
No, this is our first. Quirky Toys, we incorporated that because Kickstarter requires an S corporation. So we did that. That was an awesome learning experience. I think to that point about the craftsmanship, I think I am a highly obsessive person. And so I think in terms of the way I feel about my backers and the people that sort of the minority that have given me the kind of support, it's such a sort of an invigorating feeling. And I feel like I think the essence and the soul of Kickstarter is for a product like this. Like, this can't really exist, like Leo said, without Kickstarter because it's right. So weird.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't looking for a mass market where I could sell soap. It was something that was really special. I feel like if I had like 500 to 1,000 backers or something, the 1,000 strong, we could have something cool. And
well, it breaks my heart because I like you, Brian, and I think this is a really great product that I would love to buy. I just don't think it's doable at that price. And I want you to prove me wrong, and I want 1,000 other backers to go over to Kickstarter and prove me wrong. But I'm going to have to say go fund yourself. The only thing they can save you at this point, if you want to get that I'd fund that logo, is the vote of the people. And a Ty gives him the logo. What do we got, Glenn?
The chat room, while you have some very passionate supporters in there who definitely get this product, the ultimate vote, unfortunately, is go fund yourself 57-43%.
Oh, breaks my heart. Wow. But Brian, you got some publicity. People are going to go to that site.
You.
Maybe it's going to turn it around at Kickstarter.com.
Right,
look for the quirky
keyboard. I think it's a cool product.
I love it. I want it.
I think the
and if you build it, I'll
change.
Buy it.
I want it. I'm hoping that he makes it through.
I will do my
best.
And
I'm wrong. Thank you, Brian.
Sure.
Great
Thank
job.
Thank you very
Thanks.
Much for having me.
So we're here with Brian. Brian, how do you think that went?
I went pretty well. I was kind of disappointed that Leo didn't find it. I thought he was supposed to be the easy mark. What happened? Why? For me, this was such a great, like, amazing creative journey. I did this, a lot of it, to just prove to myself that I could learn something and be creative and actually output something that was tangible. So it's an awesome experience. Even just being here, like, it's crazy just learning how to present my product and an idea in a way to convince other people. I mean, that's kind of like the essence of creativity anyway. So this whole experience is just nothing but a win-win for me. It's disappointing. We'll see how it goes. Maybe the few hardcore people out there that'll support me, that we can get this done, and then prove Leo wrong.
If you don't hit the goal, do you see relaunching with perhaps a more modest ambition?
I definitely have a plan B and a C for different things to be able to launch if it's not successful. But, you know, I'm not sort of thinking about that right now. I'm just trying to make sure that, you know, I think we could still do it. I think we have really people that believe in this product, and we'll see. It was an awesome experience. Everyone should really try to do it and really think through what I think I'm really thinking through what Leo said, like, maybe that isn't enough, which is really bizarre. I was so concerned about getting things cheaper that there are people that think the other way. Like, no, you know, this is a great product. You need to charge a premium, but make sure you do it right. And so that's good advice.
And ultimately, how do you feel about taking responsibility for just the hundreds upon hundreds of hipsters at Starbucks that are going to be using these in the future?
It's going to be really, really challenging because every Starbucks around town. No, I can't take responsibility for that.
Next up, we have the Link, which is a device that makes any speaker wireless, and here to present are Ben Taft and Barack Kozad.
Hello, Ben. Hello, Barack. Welcome.
Hello.
Is it Barack? Like the president? Brock.
Yeah, and that gets mixed up often.
And when did you guys graduate from middle school? Recently?
Actually, elementary
back.
School. I think
you're very.
You know,
you're
we
very,
just graduated right. middle school, so we're here.
I'm
so
teasing
ready
you,
to
but
go.
are you guys in college?
We're just about to enter
next year. Yes,
next year. So you are
high school graduates.
Graduates,
yes, we are.
Rising freshmen.
Rising freshmen. Yes. Yes, sir.
That's exciting. What schools are you going to?
I'm going to Southern Methodist University
SMU?
In Dallas.
Okay.
And I'm going to University of Southern California.
And USC. Wow.
Oh, very nice.
UCLA, go Bruins.
So this is neat. So did you guys do this in high school? How did this happen?
I've loved music since I was a little kid. I played classical piano. I created a music website in high school. I recently sold it. Brock and I met in our school's incubator program called Entrepreneurship Engineering. And so we knew we had to figure out a way to combine my passion for music with his passion for entrepreneurship, our passion for entrepreneurship and, you know, engineering. And so that's how we created the first slide in our presentation. Will show Vibe Audio Innovations. And the mission of our company is to advance the way we enjoy music.
When given the option between wireless speaker systems and wired speaker systems, the average consumer, they'd pick wireless speaker systems any day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
They're, you know, much more convenient. But the issue with that is that they can be between 150% and 400% more expensive.
Mm.
So people want these wireless capabilities, but you don't want to break the bank paying for these, you know, outrageous wireless speaker systems. So we thought in our entrepreneurship engineering class that there had to be some way to give people the luxury of wireless audio without the burden of its price. So we created
the Link.
Dun, dun, dun.
The Link is a small, portable, rechargeable device that converts any wired speaker system into a wireless one, as you can see over there. How it works, you just take your audio system's auxiliary cable, where you would normally plug it into your phone and leave it there. You would instead plug it into the Link. You can connect your smartphone wirelessly to the Link via Bluetooth, as seen in the after shot, and voila, no more wires. So, you know, there are similar products out there in the ballpark of the Link, but we've differentiated ourselves in many ways. You know, Sony, Belkin, Logitech, they've all made a Bluetooth adapter. But the problem is most of their products require a constant power supply, so their adapter has to be plugged into a wall, while ours is fully portable with the rechargeable lithium-ion battery inside. Also, there are some portable Bluetooth adapters, but a lot of the battery lives are, you know, just 2 or 3 hours, while we really focus on making ours very long-lasting, almost 20 hours. And also, functionality with other Bluetooth adapters can be very confusing. You know, there's a lot of extra features, a lot of buttons. It's not, you know exactly what it's meant for. But the Link is a very simple, user-friendly plug-and-play product. It just makes your speakers wireless, and it's that simple.
And not only is it a functional product, but our sleek design and color options really set it apart from the competition. We actually brought a product designer on board who's responsible for creating various projects such as Beats by Dre headphones and RAD cameras. So we wanted, when we envisioned the design of this product with our product designer Azar, we wanted it to be something that, without even knowing what the Link did, we wanted people to want it because of the cool looks, the cool, sleek design. And not just that, but it also has very cool color options. So that's something that, in our minds, really separates us from the rest of the competition.
Fantastic.
And as for our Kickstarter, we started on June 3rd with a $50,000 goal, and we are 11 days in. We've currently raised $19,786, which is roughly 40% of our goal. And Ben will...
Yeah, and most of the funds of our Kickstarter campaign are obviously going... into manufacturing inventory, although we're allocating a good chunk of the budget to be able to really refine the electrical engineering so that the Bluetooth aspect can be very, very a great experience for all our users, be able to easily connect, be able to produce incredible sound quality with no disruption, no lag, things like that. So that's where we are today.
And we really appreciate the opportunity to be on the show.
Yeah.
And to all the viewers out there, if you have any questions, we'd love to answer them. If you want to personally email us at brock@vibeaudioinnovations.com, or Ben at vibeaudioinnovations.com. We'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Yeah, and we'd love to answer any questions you guys have.
Before you answer our questions, why don't we go back to Glenn?
Chat room, we want to know what you think and want to know your questions for the Link Audio team. You can ask questions in the Twitch chat using the hashtag IFT, and you can vote telling them I'd fund that or go fund yourself at twit.to/thelink. That's twit.to/thelink.
So I have a couple of questions, if I may. The Logitech Bluetooth audio adapter is $39.37 on Amazon. It's not rechargeable, though. That has to be plugged into the wall, and that's really the difference. It's very large. Looks like a hockey puck or like an Apple TV type of thing. Yours is much smaller.
What high school did you guys go to?
We went to Menlo School in Atherton.
Menlo School is a great school. Actually, my half-brother went there. And so they have a great entrepreneur program there.
Just started this year.
Yes.
Yeah.
The inaugural class.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And are all the members of your team from that program, or just the three of you?
Just three of us.
How'd you find your designer?
We just looked online. We met with a couple of different product designers, and we were originally going to hire him with a little bit of seed money we had, but, you know, he said, you know, don't pay us cash.
It.
He loved it. Make me a co-founder. We'll be a team.
So he has a great track record, obviously, with Beats by Dre and RID cameras. So.
I'm sure your teacher brought this up, but one of the biggest issues with a product like this is not designing it, making it. It's getting distribution. You've got nothing unless you can get this in stores, get this where people can see it. Have you addressed that issue?
Yeah. The first step we're going to take before we kind of worry about big distribution in retail is definitely direct to consumer, starting with the Kickstarter. We're going to be opening up our online store, and we're also going to be establishing a campus rep program so that we'll have...
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Go to the colleges and sell them there.
Because when you look at a product like this, this is perfect for any dorm.
Right.
You know, you want every kid wants a speaker system in their dorm, but not every parent wants to break the bank paying between 150 and 400% more for a wireless speaker system. So... for the convenient price on Kickstarter of $30 plus shipping, including shipping, excuse me, you know, this turns any speaker wireless. So this is a perfect demographic for where we're headed next year in college.
Exactly.
So. Yeah, my son he's a rising sophomore at Colorado Boulder. And he keeps asking me, can I get some speakers?
Yeah.
And we've yet to find a good solution. This would be a good solution.
Well, here you go. Are you going to possibly make these so that you can plug them into the wall, like if people want it to be wireless or not, either rechargeable or you can just leave it plugged in next to it?
Yeah, you can leave it plugged in. There's the option. There's just a micro USB charging output, micro USB to USB. You know, you can definitely leave it plugged in if you'd like, if you want to just keep it in one spot. But, you know, it's very versatile and you can take it with you. Keep it in your pocket, keep it in your car.
Pretty much whatever you want.
Yeah.
What are the colors?
We're going to do black, red, blue.
Okay.
And a possible pink option later on.
Seeing how many
For the ladies.
So the chat room wants to know, J29 Seller wants to know, can multiple links be used from one music source?
So you could like have a link in the bedroom, the bathroom, the kitchen, and all of them controlled by one iPhone. Could you do that?
No, because I think that the iPhone usually just does unique pairing. So
it's a limitation of Bluetooth.
But for one at home speaker system, you only need one link.
But you could pair it to. That's right. You can move the link around.
Exactly. Yeah. It's very portable, so you can move it wherever your speaker system is.
Yeah.
Beatmaster wants to know what Bluetooth profiles and codecs are in use.
That's among the things that we're going to be nailing down after our campaign, but we're going to be really figuring out the electrical engineering aspects, such as what Bluetooth module we're going to use, and, you know, things like the codecs. Those are things we're going to be really making sure we're going to nail down right after our campaign.
But have you identified a few? I mean, do you have a beta, right?
Yeah, that works? I mean, our current prototype uses a V1.2.
And is it working effectively?
It works effectively, but we definitely think we can improve it a lot and use a very new, you know, a newer version of Bluetooth.
Yeah. Is this an FCC Class B device?
We're basically using components. We're not making any new components ourselves. It's components that are assembled in a case, so we're not going to have to...
You don't have to get approval.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Eric Duckman in the chat wants to know how many milliamp hours?
Is the battery or the module or... The battery is about 2,000 milliamp hours, and your standard module, your Bluetooth module, will use around 100. So that's where you would get the 20-hour estimate.
20 hours, exactly. Yeah. And how many of these can you manufacture? I mean, where are you planning on to have these made?
We have quotes, both domestic and international. We're definitely hoping to be able to produce a high enough quantity to go to China within the 5,000 to 10,000 quantity ballpark. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if we want to produce domestically in our first run and lower the quantities, lower our margins a little bit just to make sure, you know, quality assurance being here in the country, we might do that as well. Yeah.
Okay.
My biggest concern is that so many speaker systems these days already have this built into them. I think most people are going to already have this. It would be great, I guess, it's analog only out of there, no optical coming out of there. It's like a little headphone jack.
Yeah,
right?
Let me really quickly let you know that in 2013, $10 billion worth of speakers were purchased. 97.5% of them were wired, 2.5% were wireless, largely due to the price difference. So
that's interesting. Yeah. All right, that's a good point. All right. So people might be looking for a way to make those wired speakers wireless.
The more you hear a lot about wireless capabilities with Jambox and Bose speakers, but, you know, from our market or from our research, we found...
it's a luxury.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's a small number of people who have these wireless capabilities.
Yeah.
I like it that you were able to respond so effectively. But Ben and Brock, I got to say, I just feel like this is a tough business. It's competitive. I'm just going to have to say I can't fund this one. I'm sorry, guys.
No problem.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting product. I'm not sure I care that much about the color part of it. I don't think this is the kind of product that is all about accessorizing and having certain colors and that sort of thing. But I don't think that counts against you. I just don't personally think that that's worth your time to pursue that. I think you just make a black one or something like that, maybe two colors or whatever. It seems low cost, and if it works and if it works well, I think it's a good, it's a very practical thing more than anything else, I think, because people have these old PC speaker systems lying around and they plug their phone directly into it, and then their phone has to sit on the table, and then they go and they are in the kitchen or whatever, and the phone rings, and it's so loud when the phone rings when your phone is plugged in and all that kind of stuff. I mean, there are like all these little annoying things that people experience that this product could solve very nicely. So I'm going to say I'd fund that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was on the fence on this one, but I think the colors make sense if you're going to really push this in college dorms, because kids want colors, they want choices, they like that kind of thing. And I have wireless speakers, so I wouldn't buy this for myself, but if I had my son in college and he's like, Mom, I want something, this might work for them. So if it works, and based on the price point, I'd say I'd fund that too.
Thank you.
So I think you have two yeses, one
two
no.
Two yeses, that's one no. What, by the way, what grade did you get on this?
We got A's.
Of course you got A's.
Of course
A's.
They did.
And by the way, guys,
they're
I
on
give
Kickstarter.
You A+. It's an excellent product. Well, thank I just
you.
Feel like
I think the price point's right. They just better make sure they get
tough,
it out.
I mean, mono,
you're right.
It's a tough business.
Monoprice makes something similar for $20. It's a tough business to get into.
Right,
Glenn. What do the people say?
The people in the chat room say, by a margin of 53% to 47%, I'd fund that.
You got funded.
So you guys
get
got
the thumbs up right
thumbs
on that
up,
Kickstarter.
I'd fund that.
We appreciate it.
Congratulations,
awesome.
Guys.
Thank you guys for having us on the show.
Nice job.
One
last
nice
piece
ties.
Of
advice.
One, well, but one last piece of advice: if you're going to be entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley, nobody wears a tie.
Okay.
So just
well, you know what though?
Because we were young.
Yeah, these
no,
gentlemen
I think they
have
look
class.
Good. That's right.
So I disagree with that. I think they look great. So I appreciate that.
Thank you
for
having us.
Thank you, guys. Brock and Ben, well done. And the Menlo School, well done on a great entrepreneurial program. I think it's fabulous.
So I'm here with Ben and Brock from the Link Audio, straight out of Atherton and fresh from their experience on I'd Fund That. What did you guys think of the process?
It was really helpful. Got a lot of great feedback, both from the judges and from all the people in the chat room. It was tough. You know, they grilled us on a couple questions, but ultimately it's these kind of questions that, you know, help you learn about your business better and make you more successful in the long run. So we really liked the experience.
What advice would you give to future candidates appearing on the show?
Well, I'd say we found that having kind of a presentation, almost a PowerPoint lined out, give the panel and the people viewing a real outline of your product, we found that that was very effective for our presentation.
And if this goes well, what's next?
We're definitely going to look into an expanded product line. There's definitely other inputs that that speakers use, such as iPhone docks, iPhone 4, iPhone 5, kind of the lightning, the 30-pin. There's RCA jacks, you know, just all these different types of wires and cables and inputs that are ready to be made wireless, so we're ready to do that.
Next up, we have the Shirley Box, which is a private and shareable cloud on your desk, and here to present is Blase.
Welcome.
Hi,
welcome,
Blase. Shirley
what
box,
do you got?
Huh?
Hi, please everyone. Don't call me Shirley.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah,
nice, Mike.
Go ahead.
Please, Blase.
I'm very excited to be here. Thank you for having me. So this is a device already funded, so we're stretching now to make it a bit even better. So this is a private cloud, what we call it. But actually, it solves much greater problem than just storing your files, because I think sync sucks.
Sync sucks.
Thank you. So what we do is we want to be a next thing after the sync. Means we want to be smart enough to know which files you need where, and we only predict that. So we have many devices, but actually what we use it is already a different purpose. Every device is used for different reason. You use it for specific to fulfill specific need. Mm-hmm. So file distribution and file delivery should be aware of that context. Right now, every device is single universe. Mm-hmm. And syncing is just, I'm going to bet 95% of just waste of bandwidth and resources because you sync everything you might need, but actually you don't. You actually need the files that you accessing like last 3 days or the specific to your situation or location. For example, at work, you're accessing work files. At home, you're accessing private files. And we want to create a software that will be aware of that. It will be predictive, and it will be on your terms. It means you're not dependable on somebody else. So first thing we do, we don't send files anywhere. You send invites. So I'm creating a folder, putting my files there, and sending advice to my friends, and they see it on my Shelly box. That's it. And we control it through the application, which is right now Mac, Windows, and very soon will be Linux. And then we go for mobile, and then we go for other storage platforms out there. We are very fast. So we also want to retire this very old transfer protocols we currently use. It's like Civ, Samba, hasn't changed in 20 years. Our files getting bigger. 4K is reality. These files are really big, and we have to move them around. The actual network is really fast. Do you complain that your cell phone bandwidth is low, or you actually complain that battery sucks?
Mm-hmm.
So mobile versus regular network is not that big of a difference anymore. What is the problem is you want to access your files, and of course, mobile devices will never contain all the files you actually need. So it's better than syncing and stuffing your drive with files you don't currently need, is having persistent, secure access to stuff you have at home, at office, anywhere you want, actually.
Hmm.
So we already passed the first goal on day 5 of the campaign. We are in the middle, 19 days to go. And currently we're stretching to make this device even better, because we started with very simple Raspberry Pi platform. Now we want to move to another flavor, which
banana.
Is banana. And banana is much better, not even for the flavor. Actually, I prefer banana over raspberry any day. But actually, on the network, on the gut itself. So obviously, we want to work the best hardware out there. There is a cost involved, and we want to make it very affordable. That's why we go for $199. We don't want to make it very too expensive. We want to be like no-brainer to get it.
$199 without storage.
With storage.
With storage.
1 terabyte
wow.
storage, $199.
Wow.
$149 with other. But actually, there is a USB expansion. You can connect all your USB drives lying around in drawers somewhere with your fine Hawaii trip photos. Now you can just share it with your friends without sending it everything to them.
Is it Blazej?
Blase. It's a Polish name.
Polish.
I'm from Poland.
Chat room, we want to hear your questions about the Shirley box. Ask them in the Twitch chat using the hashtag IFT. You can also vote. Tell them whether I'd fund that or go fund yourself at twit.to/Shirley. That's twit.to/SHERLY.
But as always, I'd wait to vote till we ask some questions, because I'm very interested about this. Now, I have used many devices like this. I've used Tonido Plug. I've used... I currently use a transporter, file transporter, which has many of the same features as this. And, of course, going way back, the Pogo plug, when they still offered a hardware solution. I think these are a great idea, and I think the market is ripe for this, because people who are afraid of using OneDrive or Google Drive or Dropbox because they were worried about privacy concerns like the idea of hosting. Tell me about the encryption. Is it how is data transported to this? Is it only within the LAN? If you have transport outside the onto the WAN, is it encrypted?
So connection between your device and your Shirley box is always encrypted.
Yeah.
Data when you transfer is also always encrypted.
Okay. SSL?
So and there is SSL is just a transport conduit. Actually,
right.
We encrypt data itself.
So it's stored on the drive encrypted as well?
That's the user decision. You can make it encrypted, but you don't have to.
Okay.
That's dependent of like what you have on your network, because obviously... The encryption will create some kind of strain on performance.
Right.
So if you're more concerned about security, you can encrypt anything. Plus, we can also we're already secure enough that if somebody will try to access your device, like laptop, and connect to your Shelly box, it will not be possible, because your laptop is linked to only your account.
As long as they don't steal the device out of your house, if you're worried about that, then you would want encrypted data on the drive.
Yeah, actually, if they steal it, they will not be able to access it, because data will not be accessible without your account.
What file system are you using?
Our own proprietary.
And you're not using SMB. You're using your own proprietary
file
network?
File protocol is our proprietary. File system, where we actually store the files, will be Linux-based.
ext3 or...
Yes, so, exactly.
Yeah. You guys have any questions? Because I could go on and on. I don't want to.
Well, it's just, I don't know. I mean, to me, I don't really use something like this. I have almost everything in the cloud. I don't need things to be so heavily encrypted that I've used something like this. Yeah. So I'm not really sure as to what's out there either with regards to this.
Well, one of the things that's out there is Protonet, which was one of the huge crowdfunding success stories. They won $1 million in like an hour and a half or something like that. Right. How is your product different from Protonet's?
Protonet, I mean, is always in German. My German is a little rusty. So I base what I know is like 1,000 euro device, which is quite expensive and quite big. And it's actually a private server. I was in distribution for 8 years. I know the server is actually hard sell because most people don't care about hardware. They care about functionality it brings. Mm-hmm. So the device itself is not really a value. What it gives you, that's the value. So that's why we want to make this as affordable as possible. And we don't, we didn't go into like top-notch hardware right from the point because we'll be ended up with really high price point.
So how do you sell something like this? I mean, how do you explain this to the lay consumer? Do you scare them with the NSA? Do you talk about the ease of use? What is it that you use to sell
actually,
this?
Actually, it's a more convenience. I don't want to have like scary story there. I think it's convenience. Like you shoot a video, 1 minute video is only 100 megs. There's nothing you can send it with. You cannot send it with email. You cannot message it. You have to put it somewhere. And for me, the notion to uploading everything to the cloud just to be able to show it to somebody is like ridiculous. I don't need to do that. I can do the same thing with my home, plus, oh, my office network. Plus, I don't have these storage constraints. I don't have to pay for it because I already have a storage. Why do I pay twice for the same thing? So you question, yeah, you can put it everything on the cloud. But the point is that if you share it with somebody, it will take a chunk of their account too because it will sync. Right. With us, it's not. It's actually you don't create this kind of, as we call it, bear favor.
You're going to integrate with Plex or XMBC?
Yes, yeah. for the convenience of actually viewing the files. So I love Plex. I'm using it for many years. It's actually great.
You wouldn't run it locally. You wouldn't be a Plex server, or would you?
Yeah, a Plex server will be on this.
Really?
And you can stream on your TV, on your mobile.
The Raspberry Pi or the Banana Pi is fast enough to do that?
Yeah, I mean, the transcoding is being done on the client.
It's already
itself.
Done, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. It's actually depending on your client, on your device you're watching. TV, for example, is powerful enough to transcode HD stream. The same goes for mobile.
A lot of this comes down to trust in you guys because I like what you're saying. I mean, I think this is a very attractive product, but you're making some promises that are kind of interesting. For instance, it sounds like in addition to TLS, you're using some sort of proprietary encryption inside the tunnel. Is that the case? I'm concerned about the protocol
is
you're using.
This encryption will be definitely a standard base.
Standard. And yes. The Shirley protocol is your own protocol?
Yes.
What's the background? Do you have partners on this, or is it just you? Who's?
No, I have a team. I mean, I have 3 developers, 5 guys full-time back in Poland, plus we have outside resources like marketing and
you've done other, technically, you've done other stuff like this? It sounds like you have a VPN protocol.
Yes, we started with technology, actually.
Yeah.
We call it gateless VPN. It was actually the Shelly technology is based on VPN. Mm-hmm. So VPN normally requires a server. We develop a VPN, we call it gateless VPN, that does not require a server. Server is like a control point, not a congestion point.
Right.
So not everything goes to the central point. So client-server architecture does not scale. I mean, you can kill any server, even in the cloud. If you just rush it with a lot of demand, it will fail. With a distributed network, it's much, much, much harder to cause any kind of noticeable problem.
One of the things I love about my transporter, and I've actually moved everything to the transporter, is that I can have a transporter here, and I can have a transporter at home, and they will synchronize as well as synchronize with the desktop. I can do that with the Shirley box as well.
Absolutely. The point is that we designed the Shirley box for sharing. So the point is that you actually don't manage it yourself. You just have it connected, that's all, and you do everything on your app.
It's a NAS, though, basically, isn't it?
Yes, with our special software. So regularly, that's NAS.
Right.
So you said you can synchronize. How hard is that to do?
Synchronization is very simple.
And it's built into your app?
Yeah. I mean, we synchronize only between devices, but if you wanted to.
I see. But that's like a feature of your app.
This is a feature, not obligation, not like our type of what we do. Mm-hmm. It's like mostly it's secure access, and then you decide what you want to do.
Right.
In the future, we want to develop this intelligence into the software. And addressing your point, you don't have to trust me with anything.
Right.
Because all I have is account information. I verified you are you. That's why you can access your infrastructure. But the data itself is always you. I don't have your data. So
you do maintain a server at the Shirley side that is an authenticating server?
Authentication and initial connection. Then you talk directly.
So you're doing NAT translation so that you don't have to
Absolutely.
Work. Now, I see that I pressed the button 3 times on my Shirley to join. Is that WPS? What is? It's wireless. It's not Ethernet.
Yeah, it's both. Yeah, okay. The point is that with regular NAS, the onboarding is real problem. I mean, if you talk to doctor regular user, the large HTTP 192, blah blah blah, it will lose them already. So with us, it's very simple to, if we have a custom app on and our own Shelly box, we can like detect the Shelly box, and now I need the confirmation like this is really yours. So press the logo 3 times.
Now, if you don't maintain the authentication server, does this stop working?
On local network, not. You can still access it like regular.
But across the
remote
the WAN,
access
it would,
will still work, obviously.
Cloud. Okay.
But on local network, it's all your, always yours.
Okay, that's good to know.
Beamaster wants to know, at what stage of R&D is this, and are the specs already set?
Specs for device?
Yeah.
Specs for the device are listed on the Kickstarter, and we just launched 0.91 beta of our Shelly application. So we're very close. We're going to be launching public version this fall. So anybody wants to try it out, just go to the website, shell.ly, download the software. It's free.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
It's not open source, though. It's
no,
closed source.
It's ours.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay, that covers our next question.
Sorry. I keep asking the same questions.
Mr. Mike wants to know, how do we give invites and rescind them to our clouds?
You send an invite through email.
Can you rescind it afwards? Can you cancel it?
Yes. And you can also revoke the access.
Yeah. Okay. So and what levels of access permission do I have? What kinds do you have? Read, write, read only?
The thing is that we do it this way that if you sync regularly and you sync share with other people can delete your files.
Right.
That's one of the problems.
Big problem with Dropbox, for instance.
Yeah. We don't do that. Means if I share something with you guys, you can erase your copies, but only I can erase my data. Plus, I can revoke access. And
so they can't modify anything at all?
They can put it on version of the file, but they cannot modify mine if I don't allow it.
Okay.
Later
but you
on,
can. You
yes,
can
yes.
say, give permissions, you can edit this file or not edit the file.
Okay. That's not ready yet.
Okay.
We'll be implementing these features down the road. We don't want to overwhelm people with many features at once.
Okay, so as of right now, I can't go, hey, I'm sharing something with you. It's private. Make some modifications. If they do, can they save it there?
They can save it in the same file. It will be a different file.
Just different file.
You want that. That way you have versions. File. You have versioning. So you
well, yeah, but sometimes you may not want that. But they're working on that second part. Okay.
Yeah, actually, the versioning is really good. For if you have like a master file and you accidentally overwrite it, I spent like several times sitting to 4 a.m. to recover what I had in my original file.
Right. Yeah.
Morbid curiosity. Why press it on 3 times? Why 3 times? Why not just once?
It could be one. It could be two. It could be 10.
To make sure that you
make sure it's yours. It's, for example, you have, 10 of those, mm-hmm. and you want to connect with particular one. I need to know which one you wanted to connect, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to identify it. I mean, I could ask you, like, can you type in a MAC address? Oh, yeah, that would be really fun. So that's why pressing the logo or actually doing anything else to distinguish between devices and also prove it's yours.
I'm very intrigued by this gateless VPN. Why not open source? Because one of the problems I always have is that if I can't see the code, I don't know what it's doing.
I agree, but hardly problem. It was open source and still was there. So I wouldn't say open source is guarantee of quality.
And TrueCrypt, we don't know what the hell they were doing.
Well, I'm using TrueCrypt, but now I don't know what to think.
Right.
And
right.
I love the TrueCrypt.
So it doesn't necessarily solve that
taking,
problem.
As a company, I'm standing 100% behind my software.
Right.
And I think with open source, I like it really. But the problem is that nobody there is taking responsibility for the problem.
That's right.
With my software, I'm taking full responsibility for my software.
You're using RSA? What are you using for encryption?
Oh, it's actually various of many things we use. RSA, yes, absolutely. IAS 256. And there is also asymmetric codes exchange and private keys, public keys, which are dynamic exchange.
So you can also do symmetric? Can you do symmetric
as
well?
Yeah. We do.
So these are all standard. So that's great. I mean, we know that these are standard forms of encryption and that they're effective and work. Any other questions, chat room?
Mr. Mike wants to know, have they considered just selling the software?
We are.
Oh,
absolutely.
You can do it right
we
now.
Are selling the software. Yes, absolutely.
And then lastly, our very own Jeff N. wants to know, why is it called the Shelly Box?
Yeah, good question.
Actually, we came up with the name with my co-founder, Mark, was sitting one day and was like, we have to make it the name. And I was like baffling this for like 6 months. What is the name? I mean, name has to be right. You say the name, it's like, that's it. Like my son's name, Jacob. Yes. It was like instant choice.
Surely.
Yeah. So actually, Shelly comes from sharing secure easily.
Ah, I like
put it.
Put it
together. And why .ly? Because a domain was available. Shelly.com was $84,500. I'm going to pass. So Shelly and Shelly Box, obviously, it's a box and Shelly on it, so Shelly Box.
Awesome.
And it's a woman's name, and it's a machine, so, you know.
Yeah, and they'll call me Shelly. Yeah, I get that. Yeah. Surely you must be kidding.
Yeah,
I think it's
Mike
got a good
Mike did that
joke.
Right away on that one.
So, panel, what are your verdicts?
Mike, you get to start.
Okay, wonderful. Well,
I think it's Mike's turn.
Yeah. And then I'll go next.
All right. Well, I wanted to hate this. I wanted to pick it apart and find something wrong with it, but I can't. The price is amazing. It sounds like you've really got the technology nailed down. I think I can really see people wanting this product. I think the time is right for this product because of the NSA, even though you're not going to be pushing that as a scaring people into buying it. But people are concerned about the cloud, about cloud storage and so on. And I think that it should be an easy sell to let people know that you're hanging on to the data and you're giving people access to something that's on your possession and is person to person. And I don't know, it just seems like an awesome product, and I'd fund that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll have to agree with Mike because I was going like, why do I need another yet storage device for my files and things like that? But in looking at this, I don't know if I would necessarily use this that much, but given your price point, and I know how Leo likes to have all these encrypted devices laying around for his files. I mean, I use ShareFile, so that works for me. But I think this would be great for the price, the type of product it is. So, yes, I'd fund that, too.
Thank you.
That's a really important point. This is one of the lowest-priced products in this category.
I've never seen one this price. Right.
You know, a terabyte drive is $100. So, for $200, I get this plus a terabyte drive. That's a very
aggressive
price. And I guess that's because of the Raspberry Pi or Banana Pi.
Yeah, yeah.
But you've put a lot of work into the software. Always a problem with stuff like this is the devil is in the details. The devil is in the software. And until we can use the software and see how easy to use it is, it's hard for me to say whether it's going to be a great product. It seems to me, though, you've checked all the most important boxes. I could see why it's been popular on Kickstarter. I could see why you got funded right away. Mm-hmm. And I think given the low price of this, that's a low risk to get involved, I'd be very interested in this. So I'm going to say I'd fund it as well. I think you've got three out of three. Let's see if the chat room agrees.
So this, I think, might be a first in that the panel... All voting, I'd fund that. The chat room, by a margin of a vote of 53% to 47%, says go fund yourself.
Really?
Really?
I think this is a great product. We obviously like it. The chat room, perhaps for reasons.
Very close.
It's close. I think some of that is a natural concern about who you guys are and what the software is behind this. And I do agree with that. I can understand that. But I think the time is right for a product like this. I like the industrial design a lot. I think it's an attractive design. I like it that it's Wi-Fi, which my transporter is not. Mm-hmm. Transporter is somewhat more expensive than this. So I think you've got a hit on your hands.
I'm
very excited. And I can't wait to try it.
Thank you
so much. Shirley Box.
Thank you so much.
We give you
name.
You can put that on your site.
Well,
congratulations and good luck to you. We'll look forward to seeing more about
that. Thank you so much. Thank you. This is like beginning. We're very excited to be
I can see that.
Level.
Yeah, I can see that. It looks like good stuff.
So I'm here with Blase from Shirley Box. Blase, how do you think it went?
Oh, I think it was well. I was very nervous in the beginning. There was a couple of TV appearances before, but, the stress was there. But once we started, one thing led to another. It was really good. I was really think I get across what I wanted to show and demonstrate.
So that was an I'd fund that first, where we had the judges all unanimously saying they'd fund it, but just by a slim margin, the chat room was against it. I think some of their concerns had to do with the lack of open source and with not knowing more about the encryption. Do you think that's going to be a stumbling block with the more hardcore tech types with this product?
I think this is a natural thing for the software that is kind of related to personal trust towards technology or the software or the hardware. So obviously we're going to put more work into explaining what we do, how we do it. We're going to put more materials on our website to explain what the technology actually does.
So what advice do you have to future candidates coming on I'd fund that?
Yeah, probably try to be calm. I guess it's like... I think the most important thing is like forget the camera. Just talk to people and answer the questions and things will be fine.
And next up is Robotar, which is a guitar chord robot that helps you play the guitar. Here to talk about it is Kevin.
Hi. Welcome, Kevin.
Hey, Kevin.
Thank you. This is my daughter, Anna, and my son, Ian.
See, that's not fair. You brought children on. I don't know. They're awfully cute.
It's okay.
You know, it's a tactic, right?
Good tactic.
He's got to explain that these kids are going to go to college, and he's going to need a lot of money.
Exactly. Somebody's got to take over the business when we're successful, right? So Robotar is a robotic chord hand for the guitar. I've got a couple of versions here to demonstrate. If you guys can, imagine one of these following scenarios. You're either a singer-songwriter, and you want to experiment with lyrics or musical structure of a song, or you want to experiment with rhythm or lyrics, you can use Robotar to actually play a song without having to learn the chords.
All you do is strum.
All you do is strum. You're still in control of the song. You use a foot pedal to change the chords. Some other scenarios are you're a music therapist or a teacher, and you're teaching young kids with delicate fingers, and you want to teach them how to engage in music in a different way. Currently, a lot of kids are limited to xylophones and tambourines. I think this is maybe another option. And then also, if you're a seasoned guitarist and you want to maybe experiment with playing both rhythm and lead on the same guitar, you can do that with Robotar. But the most important kind of catalyst for me putting this together was my father, who actually played guitar his entire life and had a stroke. And he lost the use of his left hand, actually.
Is that what originally inspired the product in the first place?
It did, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So actually, he has one right now, and he's playing guitar again after 20 years of not playing. Mm-hmm. And since I've started, the first prototype was rather clunky. This is the second prototype, and now we've got the Kickstarter version here on my left. The way that it works is it clamps onto the neck of the guitar. One of the main questions we always get is, can it slide further up and down? The nice thing about having a robotic hand is that you don't have the limitation of four fingers. So you can actually create any chord that you can dream up in the first four frets of the guitar. It doesn't need to slide up. There are a few limitations on higher notes on the first couple of strings. You can get around most of those with a single finger if you really need it. And the way that it works, we have some software that goes along with it. You actually create the chords in the software, and as you save the chords, you can put them in sequence in a song. Once they're in the song, then you simply play. And on the software, you can actually see when you demo it that you plug in the song with the chords in sequence, you put in the lyrics that you want, and you place the chords over the top of the lyrics in the appropriate spot. You push the pedal, and it'll highlight the chord on the software that you're playing, and you strum along or finger pick, let go, and then press again for the next chord. So the best way to understand it is to give it a try. So I'd love to have a volunteer.
I'll do it. All since right. Lisa says she won't. I'll step up here.
My question is, can you use it to cheat in Guitar Hero?
So this is really, you're really playing guitar, and yeah. I think some real guitarists might get mad at me saying that. It's not intended to replace learning guitar. Yeah. That's not the intention of it. It is for people that maybe have always wanted to play but have never had the time to learn. It's for those that may have a limitation and can't play, and it's, you know, outside of that, it's a nice novelty to play guitar for anybody that you guys mentioned karaoke earlier for one of them. You know, this is another option for karaoke. You can play along with your favorite songs and sing. And we had a lot of demos at the Maker Faire and we were at the Solid Conference and people came along and they would play and we had a couple of sing alongs break out. It was a lot of fun.
It's amazing. I mean, it's like a robot.
Let's give it a try. Yes.
So while Leo's getting set up, if you want to ask questions about Robotar, please do in the Twit chat, use the hashtag IFT, and you can vote. Go to twit.to/Robotar, and you can vote either I'd fund that or go fund yourself. We'll be back with the results later in the show.
All right. First of all, what I'd like for you to do is choose a song that we have in the list. So we have Stairway to Heaven.
Can I play that?
You can give it a try. This is one that you actually need one finger for. But...
I got one finger.
You can actually try the intro to Stairway to Heaven.
He gave some of the previous Kickstarter campaigns a finger, too. So,
yeah, I saw that.
All right.
And here's a pick for you.
Okay.
Now, this is just the intro to Stairway to Heaven.
So what do
and
I do? I just strum?
You're going to put your foot down on the pedal and hold it down.
Okay.
And while you have it down, the cord is actually actuated on Robotar right now.
Okay.
So go ahead and strum. And then you let go and press again for the next chord.
So you have a lot of rhythm. What happened there?
There's another song that kind of is
a
little bit
better
nicer.
Song, yeah.
It comes Eagles. Across nicer, right?
Eagles. Yeah. Okay.
So this is.
So I put my foot down and strum.
And strum. This is. You can follow along here on the lyrics. Right here,
okay.
You're on Take It Easy.
Take it easy.
It's not the sound of my wheels driving me crazy.
You might want to
help.
Actually follow. Please.
Do you have a robo voice?
No.
Leo.
You stand, take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Before we
no
other
more singing,
volunteers.
Please.
But remember, I don't know what I'm doing.
But you're also left-handed.
Well, I'm lefty, but I don't think that matters too much.
Shouldn't matter.
Why don't you demonstrate. Here, I'll give you your finger. Here, why don't you demonstrate for us? I think that's a
all
good
right.
idea.
Yeah, I would rather have a professional
somebody
demonstrate
I'm
this.
I'm not quite a professional.
Professional robotarist.
And do you guys know the words to this song?
Everybody sing along.
You don't want me singing.
Look at, notice his left hand is doing nothing.
That's interesting. Very nice.
Golf clap,
that's
golf it. Clap. So what happens if you miss the pedal, if you miss your timing on the pedal?
You can accelerate your pressing to get back to where you want,
okay.
Or just stop pressing and you'll
catch
be back
up.
In the song.
If you want to use this for teaching guitar.
If you want to learn how to play guitar, my suggestion is learn how to play guitar.
This is not for that.
It's not for that. It's
This is like an auto harp. This is something that will pick out the chords for you.
It will pick out the chords for you, allow you to concentrate on lyrics and music. Where it can help teach, though, is rhythm. As was just demonstrated,
some people have rhythm.
Maybe use some more practice with strumming and the construction of a song. I'm sorry, Leo.
No, you can totally say that.
I did not want to do this, but Lisa refused. I guess we should have let Mike
know. No,
that was perfect.
Yeah.
So
it was the right choice.
I think the thing that's amazing is that, are you a robotics designer? What's your background?
I'm a senior director of IT at a local Fortune 500 company.
It's very impressive that you were able, because I've never seen anything like this,
that
you were able to design something. You're a maker, I guess?
Yes. Yeah.
Because, I mean, can you show us the inside, or is it possible? I mean, what is going on there? Are there little servos?
I imagine that there's like a Terminator hand inside there.
Yeah, that's what it feels like, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, I think this is really innovative and incredible.
Wait, so can I just back up and play like the layman here? What is this for really then? I mean, it's just to learn rhythm, to learn song. I mean,
so as I mentioned,
what would I use this for?
The main audience is for those that have a limitation in one of their hands. So,
okay.
Like his father, who's a guitarist.
No, I understand, but we've talked about that. We've talked about teaching and rhythm and all of this. I'm trying to understand, if you're trying to sell me this product, why am I interested in it? I want to understand the marketing pitch behind
you would be,
it.
Yeah, you would be interested in it if you were interested in playing music, mm-hmm. if you were interested in singing. Right now, the only option for singers is either to sing to the radio or to sing with somebody else accompany them unless they play their own instrument.
Right.
So right now, this gives a new option for anybody that wants to practice singing. They want to write music. This is completely flexible to be able to write your own music. Mm-hmm. If you're a guitarist and you want... Guitarists are... many that I know, they... seek out different devices that will help them experiment with different sounds. This is an option to actually play rhythm using this, mm-hmm. so some normal blues blues rhythms, and then a lead further up the neck that can experiment with melodies. I had, on my Robotar video, there's a professional jazz musician who plugged in some chords, played the chords with this, and then played melodies up here. And
oh, that's neat.
One of his comments was this actually opens up options for guitarists to develop melodies and play chords at the same time, similar to how someone might on a piano. Okay. Said, today you can't really do that on a guitar.
So how much is this costing and what do you get with it?
So we have an entry level with lower end servos, and we're working on a way to make sure that those lower end servos can actually perform well. I'm actually recommending the higher end servos, which is in this one. The lower end is $319, the higher end is $745.
Okay.
The thing I find most interesting is the maker kit, which is $175. If you're a maker, the instructions, everything you need to know how to do this yourself. And I think that's very interesting. I think there's a market for makers who might want to build something like this.
Yeah, I think the interesting components in this and the software that goes along with it can actually be expanded to manipulate servos in many different ways. Right. So the idea here is that now there's a way to, and there's a bunch of different ways to do this with Arduino or some other microcontrollers, but we actually figured out how to do it with a Yo-Yo microcontroller, which interfaces with Android. So right now this is Bluetooth capable.
Oh,
it's also Android capable, so I could actually run the same software I have on my laptop on a handheld device. Hey guys, on a handheld device, tablet or phone, mm-hmm. and I can see the cords on that tablet, so I don't need a laptop in front of me, and I can be wireless.
And did you print the pieces 3D printer?
These are all 3D printed through Shapeways. I just contracted somebody local to actually build out and send me the case and all the parts for it at a much lower cost. Shapeways, the quality is really great, but it's actually not too bad coming from the local provider as well.
That's really cool. That's really cool.
I don't really have a question other than to throw out a pointless suggestion that it could also be used in a band with, you have a keyboard player and you just need, like, you know, you need 30 seconds of a guitar.
Yeah.
They could use one hand for the keyboard and the other hand for the guitar. Anyway.
We had a couple of high school kids in at the Maker Faire come by, and mm-hmm. we were kind of joking around that they've got a friend that plays drums and another friend that plays bass, and they want to start a band. Well, all of a sudden, you can mm-hmm. plug yourself in and have some fun.
Yeah.
I love your kids. I got to say, Ian and Anna, you're adorable. Glenn?
So a couple questions. Abstruse wants to know, how much does it weigh?
It's about a pound, actually. The plastics aren't that heavy. Probably the heaviest part of it are the servos that are inside of it.
But I have to say, having used it, it does just unbalance the guitar a little
bit. A lot of what you were feeling was the power cord. So with a longer power cord, you were pulling up the...
it was pulling me down.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. All right. Basically, I screwed it up in every way you possibly can, short of unplugging it.
All right. Mr. Mike wants to know, where do they get the songs from in terms of importing them and how
you
to...
You can build any of your own songs. So ultimateguitar.com, you can go out and see all the chords required.
So use the tabs.
You can use the tabs, plug them in. It's very easy to build. In fact, there was a guy that demoed it that had his own song that he wanted to plug in. We plugged it in about 5 minutes, and he played. He had arthritis in one hand, and he played his song that he hadn't played for quite a few years. You plug them in yourself, or they're XML files, so you can share them. We're also next step is to create a sharing website where people can share songs.
That's all we have from the chat, although I do want to point out this actually ties into a conversation you and I were having, Leo. We were talking about at Bottle Rock, Matt and Kim, and people now using samplers, using all sorts of backing tracks. I mean, this definitely ties into that in terms of
it's a robotic band,
a way to augment your live performance, essentially.
It also reminds me of the kind of the old school robot one man bands and things you'd see at the penny arcades where they would play, and it was all robotic. I think it's kind of it's a wonderful maker project. Now, we should point out you have been 3 weeks now on Kickstarter with not a lot of interest, 19 backers, $2,000 towards your goal of $230,000.
Well, yeah,
trying to raise.
And that's kind of my question. $230,000? Why a quarter million
so
dollars?
So I really wanted to push the envelope on this and do it right. Hardware is difficult, as you guys know. So to get the appropriate amount to pay for the molds for injection molding and bring the costs down, which is, I think there's not a whole lot of people out there that probably want this at the price point we can offer it at Kickstarter. So I wanted to start out strong, see if there's demand, first of all, if there's a market, and also try to bring the cost down by getting injection molded parts. If we were to meet that goal, I would see that there was both a market for it and I could have a cost lower and maybe take it to the next step. So it was important to get to the next step. I would have preferred to start smaller, but realistically, the math didn't add up. So
it's good you're realistic. I mean, I think that's important.
The other piece that I wanted to emphasize is I'm also, I think this is fully functional. It's great. If people want it for the function, this is the time. If they want it for the sexy, that's next, right?
And this would work on pretty much any guitar or?
Oh, yeah, that question. It can work on electric guitar and acoustic with a standard neck size. We do have some flexibility in the width of the neck, but it wouldn't fit on a classical guitar, for example.
Shall we vote?
I am going to give you $10 just for the pick, the pen, and the brochure. It's not something, as you can see, that I would ever, ever have any use for because I have no musical ability at all. But Ian and Anna are so cute. I just, not when you make that face, though, Ian. Don't make that. Just my suggestion. I'm going to say I'll fund it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
You want to go next? You want me to go?
No, I'll go ahead and go next. I think you need to narrow your focus and who your market is. I think the price is a little too high. I mean, quite a bit too high, substantially too high. I don't really care if it's sexy, but I had to keep going, who's this for? Why are you doing this? I had too many questions. And bottom line is, based on the price, based on how much you're needing to raise to make this happen, I'd say go fund yourself.
You're such an evil person. No. Ian and Anna here.
They're adorable. They're adorable.
It's their father you're talking
about. I know.
So,
you're a sucker.
There are a couple of things about this that are very compelling. One is the helping people who are impaired in some way to play music, which is very important, and it's a beautiful thing. The other one is the maker aspect, and the you know, you're right there with what's happening in technology with the 3D printing and the maker thing and using robotics to make art, essentially. Those are two awesome things. But unfortunately, I actually think that what would be much more compelling, and I'm not even sure that would be compelling enough, would be a guitar that has it built in somehow, as opposed to a thing that clamps on. I'm going to say go fund yourself, mostly for the same reasons Lisa did. The difference between the market that I can imagine, and it could be a failure of my own imagination, but the market I can imagine versus the amount you're raising, those are very, you know, if you're going to raise that much money and you're going to have the next iPhone, that's one thing, but I don't see this ever being a huge mass market thing. I don't think you necessarily intend for it to be. I just have trouble putting those two things together. So
I didn't think when I came in today that I would be sitting next to two such grouchy people.
Excuse me,
grouchy people.
We're not grouchy.
You didn't know we were going to be on the show.
I appreciate
the honesty. Let's see what the chat room has to say.
Well, good news for Leo. 58-42%. Chat room says I'd fund that.
You're kidding! Right. The crowd says thumbs up. See, Anna and Ian, you were right to have him as your father.
Awesome.
Thumbs up.
The tiebreaker needs to be somebody off on the
Robotar
side.
Robotar guitar cord robot. It's on Kickstarter. Yeah. You've only got 7 days to go. I hope we can help you get some. I tell you what, it's just a great maker project. And I do, in all seriousness, I think a lot of people would very much love to get the plans for this. And they should go there and you can...
I agree.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Nice job. Right,
thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Wow.
Grumpy people.
Not grumpy. I'm just a realist.
I don't think cute kids is the criteria, Leo.
I need
having controversial split decision in there. What do you think of how do you think it went?
Exciting. I'm glad the crowd came through for me. It was great.
You know, people definitely seem to be very split on it. What are your plans? I know you're bit of a lofty goal with this initial Kickstarter raise. Do you have sort of a plan B if you don't hit that amount?
I do. It was a bit of a Hail Mary. We wanted to make sure that there was a market for it. I think the market is focused, and we're going to regroup and see if we can target that very focused market rather than the broader market next.
You got half your entourage here. I assume the other half is trashing the dressing room as we speak. Any advice for future contestants on the show?
Come, show up, have fun, take the great advice. I think we got some good advice. And it's going to be, I looked on my phone on the way out and I already have a new backer. So come check it out.
So that wraps it up for our second episode of I'd Fund That. If you have a product you'd like to submit for consideration on the show, send an email to idfundthat@twit.tv. And we'll see you next time right back here on I'd Fund That.